Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Day. It will always be Columbus Day on the Savage Nation. Today is Italian Heritage Day. And for a long while today, we're going to celebrate great Italian Americans through history. Of course, we're playing Pavarotti right now, one of the great singers of this period. But there were others. There were inventors, poets, artists. Do I have to name them? Do I have to start with Mr. Galileo himself, Italian origin, astronomy pioneer and physicist? And yet, if I were to say to you, has your child been taught who Galileo was, or Amerigo Vespucci, or Dante Alighieri, or Leonardo da Vinci, or Giuseppe Verdi, or Antonio Vivaldi? Do they know who Enrico Fermi was? The answer would be no, because the communists have so infected our schools that they have now made Columbus not only not a hero, but a villain. The vermin who are now in the National Education Association, the communists who are writing the textbooks, have now turned him into a criminal. They have criminalized all of the white European heroes of our time and turned them into the enemies. Now, it is true, of course, that horrors were induced upon the Native Americans upon the arrival of the conquistadors. There's no question about it. And yet, how often do we hear about the horrors inflicted upon the Native Americans by themselves, tribe to tribe, intertribal horrors? I mean, the noble savage has long been exploded as a myth. We do know that one tribe captured the other, skinned them alive, raped their women, tortured them until they were dead, skinned them, threw them out in the snow without skin. Did you read about that in your little book about how man treated man, or man's inhumanity to man? The point is that man's inhumanity to man is not limited to a particular race. It can be found in all races. And today I'd like to spend a little time talking about man's humanity rather than man's inhumanity, because we are now suffering through the inhumanity of lies. We can take the obvious. We have one of the coldest early winters on record, yet the big liar, Al Corleone, the head of the Corleone crime syndicate, in my opinion, continues to get away with murder. Because the drug addicts on MSNBC, the drugged-up newscasters, tell you, "Oh, it's very cold. In Idaho, the lava lose the potato. It's really cold." Then they don't make the next step. Therefore, hello, can we question global warming? No, because they're brainwashed little people. The Lilliputians in education, the Lilliputians in the media. But here on the Savage Nation, as I say, it is Italian Heritage Day. So let us begin with, again, a little Italian music. We've gone to the high. Let us go to the low. Let us play a little of the low music to capture the luna mezzumara, mamma mia, mamma di dare. Figlia mia, cosa dare, mamma mia, pensacci tu. Se te piglia lo pesciaiole, se vai, se viene, se vuoi lo pesciaiole. Everybody follow the bouncing mortadella. Se ci ingappa la fantasia dei pescioli a vigliuzza mia. Everybody sing. La riola, pesce fritta baccalà. Everybody sing. Uè, gomba, no calamara, c'ha giacata. Amazing how cultures come to this country and how some contribute and some don't. You think about it. You think of all of the waves of immigrants into America and what they've contributed and what they haven't contributed. Think about it. Just think about it. Think about it before you open your pie hole. Think about it before you start putting down Columbus. Think about it before you teach your children more rat trap toys and put them on drugs. You play the music before I really lose it here. I don't want to lose it today. I want to stay calm. Now, Columbus is being slammed by the vermin in the media and the vermin in the news and the vermin in the in the classrooms. But I want to talk about another more fundamental question on the Savage Nation today, since it's Italian Heritage Day and many people are not working. Many people are working. We hear that the Native American was the first inhabitant of the North American continent. I mean, that's the common knowledge, that Columbus came and discovered America, and soon thereafter the other explorers came and exploited the sacred Native Americans. Now, there's no greater, there's no talk show host in America who knows more and respects more the Native American culture than I. Remember, in 1972, I was so enraptured by Native American culture that I studied for years and published the great book, Earth Medicine, Earth Foods, which is still in print somewhat 40 years later. I don't need anyone to tell me what I've done and what I didn't do. Half the people who criticized me weren't alive yet. But the fact of the matter is, I certainly respect Native American intelligence and wisdom. That does not mean that there were not evil people in the Native American communities. Horrible people on the order of some of the worst that you've ever seen. The point I'm making is a little different, though. Were the Native Americans the first to inhabit North America is the question. The answer is probably not. I remember in 1996, this has been buried, but I remembered it, and I'm going to use it today. In 1996, there was an 8,400-year-old skeleton found in Washington State that was named afterwards Kennewick Man, discovered near Kennewick, Washington in July of 1996. The skeleton was identified by scientists as approximately being, as I say, 9,000 years old. Immediately, five northwestern tribes invoked their right under NAGPRA, the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act, to immediately rebury him in accordance with their religious traditions. At the same time, archaeologists filed suit to prevent the burial of these skeletons, arguing that the skeleton is not a tribal ancestor and can shed new light on the earliest inhabitants of North America. And so Kennewick Man became the center of a debate between science and religion, in which both sides sought the protection of government and the law. I want you to understand that it turns out that the discovery of this ancient skeleton suggests that the earliest inhabitants of North America may have been Caucasian, And you say, well, what does that have to do with anything? I'll let you decide what it has to do with anything. That's what I'll let you do. You could decide what it has to do with anything, if anything. North American claims that they owned it and they wanted to bury it. They didn't want it studied. Archaeologists said, wait a minute, we're going to lose the opportunity to study Kennewick Man further. And so, as I said, they filed suit against the Corps of Engineers to block the transfer of this newly discovered skeleton to the tribes. And the fact of the matter is, some did study it. They did study it, and they quickly discovered the following. They discovered that the skeleton was Caucasian. Many anthropologists immediately said that it was a skeleton that was of Caucasian origin. Another anthropologist said it shows some traits that are more commonly encountered in material from the eastern United States or even of European origin, while certain other diagnostic traits cannot presently be determined. And so, therefore, ladies and gentlemen, before you throw away all of history for political correctness and move into communist China in your mind, understand that a lot of what you are hearing on the media, in your schools, are absolute lies being taught in order to debase the European American and to debase Europeans in general. And frankly, I'm not going to take it anymore. I'm a trained scientist. I'm not going to take this rubbish from anybody. Today is Italian Heritage Day on the Savage Nation. We are celebrating all the contributions of Italians, Eugenio Barsante, who invented the internal combustion engine. You heard me. The very car you drive, the internal combustion engine, Barsante invented it. Who invented eyeglasses? Salvino D'Amate. Who was Enrico Fermi? Why is it not taught in your child's school? He was part of the University of Chicago team that created the first sustainable nuclear reaction. Fermi, great nuclear physicist. Who was Galileo Galilei? Do your children know that? Astronomy pioneer and physicist. What did Galileo discover? Who was Marconi? Well, he was the engineer who developed wireless telegraphy. Marconi, without him, there'd be no radio. And who was Alessandro Volta, a pioneer in electricity? Eponym of the word volt, inventor of the electric battery. Volta, Italian. Who was Amerigo Vespucci? Discovered other parts of America. Gave his name to the new continent. Discovered the Amazon River in South America. Who was Dante? Do any of your stupid children learn that, or they learn how to put a condom on a cucumber? And who was Leonardo da Vinci, Enrico Caruso, Luciano Pavarotti, Giuseppe Verdi, Antonio Vivaldi? You don't know any of that? But you know what? You know what? What do you know? How to put a condom on a cucumber? Play some music, and I'll be right back on the Savage Nation. That's what I'm going to do today. No, I'm sorry. You better go to Lou Monte, Lazy Mary, because they're not going to lose them with the high class. We got to go to the low. Play Lazy Mary. That's what I want to hear. After all, this is an audience that watches Fox News as well. You can't have anything highbrow on the show. Go low. Get out the Preparation H. Start crying. Squeeze the napkins. See, at this stage of my career in talk radio, it's all about learning and teaching and learning and teaching and learning. I don't care about ratings. I don't care about selling books. I don't care about anything except learning and teaching. That's all that's left. Now, if I say to you that the world we're living in is an upside-down world and it's insane, and I give you proof, what more do you need to hear than the following story? Janet Napolitano, the head of the so-called Department of Homeland Security, has just announced that she's going to house detained illegal immigrants in converted hotels. That's right. She's taking illegal immigrants out of jails, and she's going to convert hotels with your money to detain non-criminal illegal aliens. Now, if you don't see this as corruption, contractor corruption, if you don't see this as corruption of the very immigration laws that we all adhere to, then I'd like to know what is. And so it becomes frustrating when you see that we have gangsters in high places. We have a gang that has taken over the United States of America from the top to the bottom, from the state house to the outhouse. Everywhere you look, criminals are running everything, in my opinion. And it seems to me that everybody is being criminalized except the true criminals who have criminalized everybody else. And that's why I say one thing you're not going to take away from me is the truth. Today is Columbus Day. I call it Italian Heritage Day if you would like. I could give a rat's, you know what, less care about the left-wingers who are trying to silence the truth about Italian-Americans or about Columbus and turn him into a villain. In other words, in order to smear an entire Italian race, that's what they're trying to do. I won't let it happen on this show. We have a man granted a Nobel Prize last week who did nothing. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Some have said it was a disgrace. Others have said it will undermine him because everyone knows now that the man is a king without clothes. Others have said it's the first affirmative action Nobel Prize. I don't agree with that because there have been many others along the way. I could name five of them that were affirmative action Nobel Prizes. But the Nobel Prize itself has based on a will of Alfred Nobel. In 1895, he wrote a will. It says it should go to the person who shall have done the most or the best work. Shall have done. Shall have done. What's the accomplishment of Obama? The guy can't even make a spaghetti dish, for God's sakes. Your local Italian restaurant provides more benefit to the people than the White House does. Joe in New York, WOR, go ahead, please.
Yeah, how you doing, man? I just wanted to thank you for, like, mentioning, you know, Vivaldi and all the Italian cats, because we're all not just the Sopranos. You know what I mean?
Well, I know. That's why I went down the list. I mean, I read the names of the famous contributions, you know, from Barsanti to Galileo, Marconi, Volta, Vespucci, Dante. I mean, it's quite an amazing list of people. And yet in the popular culture, owing primarily to Francis Ford Coppola, who has, in essence, smeared his own race, by the way.
Everybody's a gangster. You know what I mean? If you're Italian.
Well, the real gangsters don't even show themselves as such. It's the fakers. It's the dentists from Bayonne who want to look like they're a wise guy. You know that, and I know that. Am I right?
Because they glorified it with the Godfather, the real.
Yeah, but the average Italian who's actually, let us say, on the other side of the law hides it. the fakers walk around like they're, you know, in that world. I mean, it's crazy. The whole thing, the whole world is a charade. You know that.
Absolutely. Thank you.
So what I'm doing today is it's Columbus Day. The left-wing communists are trying to steal it from the heritage of the Italian people. I'm not Italian, but I have benefited so much in all the years in terms of the culture that I think it's only fitting that I lay the record straight here on the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to San Francisco. White Wolf, welcome to the program. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Mike, I have to disagree with you on a few things. First of all, I'm myself half Native American and half Italian.
All right? Oh, boy. And, now, would you say you got the best of both worlds or the worst?
I'd say the best.
Okay.
But, you know, as far as race goes, you know, there's a lot of arguments about who and what is a Caucasian. Native Americans are really Asiatics. I mean, if you look at the features, a pure, I've got some Asiatic features, but a pure-blooded Native is, he's very little different in features from Japanese or Filipino.
Right. Well, I would say that the theory that the Native American emigrated across the land bridge during the last ice age is a factual representation that I could live with. What about you?
Probably from the Polynesian Islands also.
Well, now you're changing it now from Asia, per se, across the Aleutian chain when the ice age covered when the ice covered most of the Northern Hemisphere and people could walk from Asia to North America. You could argue that the Polynesian Islands at that time were connected. Yeah, you could say that. But the Polynesian Islands, anthropologically, also were populated by Asian people.
Well, yeah, that's what I said. And that's, you know, I'd say probably Mexico, South America. The natives probably originated from there. But anyway, but as far as...
Make your point, but I want to make a bigger point, which is that at the end of the day, we're all one species. Let's never forget that. Let us never forget that we're all Homo sapiens. I don't think people understand that. There are no different species of man. It's all one mankind, one species. You know that.
Yeah, but, you know, as far as Italians go, especially Sicilians, and, you know, for most Italians in this country are Sicilian descent. They're not completely white or Caucasian anyway, because there's the Moors.
Yeah, oh, let's talk about the seven conquests of Sicily. It's a very important point, a very important cultural point.
Savage.
Mario Lanza, Pagliacci, one of the greatest of all time. Mario Lanza, the recordings aren't as good, but just listen to it for a second. Indulge me. What this great opera is about is how every man is a clown to someone. I mean, that's what it comes down to. No matter who the guy is, no matter how tough he is on the outside, he's a clown to somebody somewhere at some time, or he will be, or was, by the way. So here we are. We are talking about Italian Heritage Day. I mean, there's a lot of news in addition to it, you know. We could talk about the sad news out there. It's depressing. It's just depressing. We got a president on training wheels getting Nobel Prizes, and next the Heisman Trophy. I expect he'll get a Pulitzer Prize, a Tony Award. I mean, what else are they going to give this guy for having done nothing? It's unbelievable. There's people, I know people who voted for him who are just shaking their heads. Over the weekend, someone said to me, they voted for the guy. Everyone's embarrassed. They're embarrassed for themselves, let alone for him. They know he didn't deserve it. They know he didn't deserve it. So we're going to talk about really accomplished individuals. You know, Vivaldi, Verdi, Pavarotti, Caruso, Da Vinci, Bonatti, Alighieri, Vespucci, Volta, Marconi, Galileo. Shall I name a few more? These are really accomplished people. So far as I know, none of them were given a Nobel Prize. Of course, most of them existed before the Nobel Prize, before dynamite was invented. So you'll understand what a prize means. Prizes are like you-know-what. We all have one. You ever hear that joke? Opinions are like blank. We all have one. That's the next time you hear an opinion you don't like. I love that statement because it's true. What's an opinion worth? The Nobel Prize today is an opinion. It's not actually based upon an accomplishment when it comes to things like this. That's another news story. But there's so much other out there. I mean, Afghanistan, the guys are being denied the backup they need. It's like a cop calling for backup and the police chief being Obama saying, I'm not sure. I'm busy collecting a prize. Middle of a firefight, they call for backup and Obama's in Copenhagen lobbying for the Olympics. You hear? You got a winter coming on earlier than ever, and the schmucks in the green racket are telling you it doesn't matter that winter's coming on earlier. Why? Because there's a fortune being made. NBC Universal, why do you think they're all kissing Obama's behind? Because Mr. Immelt of General Electric, the parent company of NBC, struck a deal with the Obama administration to get about $1 trillion, the last I read, and correct me if I'm wrong, $1 trillion in green energy projects are going to be thrown to NBC so that the two networks even become more left-wing. So you say you're living in a free society. It's all relative freedom. You enjoy it while you can. You're living in a banana republic right now, and you don't know it. You got an imposter as president put in there by people you don't even understand who they are. An imposter! It's like the gardener with the movie, The Gardener. They made him the president. Oh, he knows everything. Yeah, let's say he is the president. So what? That means he knows everything? How could he know everything? How could the man know economics when he never ran a hot dog stand? Let's start with the basics. The guy never ran a business. He never built a business. How can you know anything about business? How can you know anything about meeting a payroll, paying a tax? Nothing, but already he's the genius of everything. Fine, he's the president. So what does that make him, a genius in every field? So you say, all right, no president is an expert in every field. They surround themselves with advisors. So he surrounds himself with communist college professors who also never owned a business in their life. All they do is espouse communist philosophy day and night. That's what we have now in America. That's what we have now in America, an imposter in the White House, surrounded by communist imposters. So you want me to now spend my time talking about politics? You want me to talk about politics? A great American, Nancy Pelosi. How about that for famous Italian-American? Nancy Pelosi, she'll go down in history as what? What is she famous for? For bankrupting America, treating it like a sporting goods store that's being busted out. Rob in New York, WOR. Go ahead, please.
Michael, it is official. As you've said, the country has been turned upside down. I'm sitting at dinner with my daughter, who's in fifth grade, and right. She's telling me about her day and the fact that they had an assignment today, that should we or shouldn't we celebrate Columbus Day, Michael?
Yes, and a darker side of Columbus emerges in U.S. classrooms. Can you believe this? They're charging one classroom in Pittsburgh. Fourth grade students at Fort Cherry Elementary put Columbus on trial this year, charging him with murder. They sentenced him to life in prison. They said he was a bad guy. You hear this?
It's beyond belief, Michael. The kids come up with he founded America. He saw that the oceans weren't flat. All of those things that we grew up with, Michael. And then the teacher, who by the way is an Italian American, which blows my mind completely.
Slow down for a minute. If you think that there are no Italian American left wingers, I gotta think Sacco and Vanzetti. I mean, the Italian people have a long history of flirting with radical left wing movements. You know that.
I understand that completely, but it's just sitting here as a God-fearing American who pays my taxes, and to sit there and to listen to this drivel is just beyond belief, Michael. I listen.
Well, that's why I'm doing the show today, Bob. I figured some people would listen with their children. Do they know about the famous Italians other than this controversy, or they're not allowed to learn about Italian Heritage Day? Only certain races get their days. Is that it?
Well, thank God, Michael, as you were rattling off all of the geniuses that are from Italian-American descent, my family was sitting around the table saying, yes, 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 and they know who all of those individuals
good.
Are.
Well, all right, and that should make everybody proud, Italian or not. When we have an Irish Day, it's going to be Irish Heritage Day. When we have Polish Day, we're going to have whatever comes up, we're going to have on this show. Whenever we have a day to celebrate a particular culture, a particular race, today is the Italian Day, and they're going to get it. They're getting the rewards today. Oh, boy. So I hope, if you learn nothing today, I'll tell you what I want you to take home, because a lot of you don't. I know educated people don't know this. And lucky I had a training in anthropology prior to botany, prior to nutrition. And in anthropology, I distinctly remember the Kennewick Man controversy that came and went rapidly in July of 1996. And you have to take this home, and you have to start researching it. And what I did was I put the story up from some scholarly sources on michaelsavage.com. In fact, one of the sources that I put up on my website, I did it specifically to blunt the communists who are going to complain that I'm making this up. The argument that I'm putting forward on Kennewick Man, 9,000 years old of Caucasian ancestry, found in America, that was completely immediately buried by five native tribes that didn't want their history, let us say, overridden. This story comes from the National Endowment for the Humanities from a couple of years ago. The National Endowment for the Humanities. So if you think it's coming from some right-wing site, you're mistaken, unless you now want to declare the National Endowment for the Humanities a right-wing site. I'm sorry I actually did it, because I'm sure that the czars will soon purge the NEH and put in some communist into it, some czar that nobody has to vet. Maybe they can get a czar, someone thrown out of Moscow University in 1864. Kennewick Man, 8,400-year-old skeleton found in Washington State, 1996. Scientists got a little chance of studying it, and they found out that he was not of Native American descent, but he found certain characteristics that were from Caucasian people. Now you say, well, what does that mean? I'll let you figure out what it means. That's all. It means that one race comes in and wipes out the one that was here before if they can. You want a real cynical view of reality? Hey, I'll give you a real cynical view of reality. Every nation on earth was forged in blood. Let's start with Michael Savage's principle number one. You want a real harsh principle of reality? Not one for children who grew up on Donald Duck and Mickey Mouse and how to put a condom on a cucumber? Here's one. There's not a nation on earth that was not forged in blood. That's number one. Number two, whenever possible, an invading people will wipe out the people that were there before them, usually by war. In our case, it's by law. In every case before this, it's by war that an existing race was wiped off the planet or pushed out of their own homeland. In our case, it's law. Lawyers! Lawyers! Chicken lawyers! Chicken-livered lawyers have taken your country from you. They've ripped you off of your own nation, your own dignity. Oh, you say, well, you still have your house, you still have your house, you still have your this, you still have your that. You have nothing. The way communism works is first they tear down all of your heroes. They tear down all of your monuments. All of your history is rewritten. The rest is easy. Once they destroy your history, once they destroy your dignity, there is nothing left of you. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Celebrating Columbus Day in the Savage Nation. We can call it Italian Heritage Day. That's what we're doing. And by the way, those of you who are interested in history, those of you interested in reality, I have only 300 copies left of Banned in Britain, first printing, first edition. I don't think I'm going to reprint it. In fact, when the book is finished, you're not going to hear about it from me anymore. I'm sick of the topic. I got to be honest with you. Right now, I don't even want to talk about it anymore. All I can tell you is I was targeted by an entire Western nation, and I'm being targeted by the American media as well. If you think that that's not true, I got a sad second guess coming for you. Anyway, let's go back to the reality of today, Columbus Day special. A big question, did Caucasians predate Native Americans? It's a very important piece of history that came up in 1996 when a skeleton was found in Kennewick, Washington. It was reburied almost immediately by Native American tribes. But in fact, it had been studied prior to the reburial by archaeologists, and they discovered that the skeleton was 8,400 years old, and it was probably of Caucasian origin, which tells us something about a lot of things. It should draw us closer together. Instead of making a particular race sacred, and instead of making another race demonic, it should tell you that there are similarities in all races in terms of human nature. That's what it should tell you. Burlington, Vermont. Steve, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
You know, Michael, you were just equating that Barack Obama wasn't qualified to be president because he never ran a hot dog stand. I don't ever remember Winston Churchill being in business at all. I don't remember George S. Patton being in business at all.
Steve, now I know you live in Vermont, and therefore I consider you handicapped, mentally handicapped, so I won't get angry. Your logic doesn't work at all, because General Patton was a famous war hero from World War I prior to becoming a great hero in World War II. So where's the comparison?
Well, you're saying you got to run a business to be qualified to be president of the United States. None of these men were ever ran a business, and they are. I'm assuming you thought they were.
Steve, I know that you're handicapped mentally. I know that. Because you've called the show, and I understand that you're medicated and that you have no logical capacity in your brain, so I'll be kind again. The point is that Obama has no experience doing anything. The point is you're making is a false point. You're saying Patton never ran the business. Nobody ran a great army. And prior to being a great army officer in World War II, he was a great army officer in World War I. He was commissioned in the army in 1909. So you're not making any sense, Steve.
Hey, you know, there's a lot of people.
Steve, you're mentally deranged. I know that in Vermont it probably passes for keen logic, but it doesn't pass muster on the Savage Nation. Have a nice day. Thanks for trying. Why don't you take that by the grade school in your neighborhood, a little red schoolhouse, and try to run that one by the children? You hear the schmucks that call the show what I got to put up with to make a living? I say to Obama, never ran a business. How could he know anything about the economy? That's a statement that makes sense to anybody who's run a business. So now the guy calls up and says, but Patton never ran a business either. There's no comparison between the two. He was commissioned in the Army in 1909. The guy was a warrior in World War I. In World War I, Patton was the first officer assigned to the new United States Tank Corps. He was a tank hero in World War I. He saw action in France. After World War I, he was a strong advocate of armored warfare. In World War II, he became a great tank warrior. He commanded both corps and armies as a general in North Africa, Sicily, and Europe. The fact of the matter is, he had great experience prior to World War II. While Obama has no experience prior to becoming the president, let alone being given a Nobel Prize. Can't put two and two together. David in Virginia Beach, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Ciao, Mike. How are you? Well, I'm an Italian-American, and I can just tell you that Sopranos notwithstanding, it's really a great day. And if people really, really dug and learned about Columbus, they'll understand that he tried to stop a lot of what Spain wanted to do, and they put him in jail. So Columbus was not the demonized person.
Well, it's an interesting question unto itself. Why would the Queen of Spain hire an Italian naval genius called Columbus to launch an investigation of the New World? Why didn't she use Spanish naval individuals? Do you have an answer to that question? Why were the Spanish not competent with regard to captaining ships?
I think I'm not a historian. I am.
All right. Well, let's not speculate then. I don't want to. I think, therefore, I am. I want facts, nothing but facts. By the way, just to go back to a thread of a discussion from earlier, the interesting thing is that you look at Sicily. You see a mixture of various phenotypes in Sicily that are very, very interesting. And you have to ask yourself why. How do you explain blonde, blue-eyed Sicilians? People say, well, Sicilians tend to be darker than most other Italians on average. But you can see many individuals with blonde or red hair or blue or green eyes throughout the island of Sicily. Why? Because the Viking French Normans conquered and ruled Sicily at one time. Okay? What about some of the other heritages that are ever present in Sicily? There are people with fairer skins. What does that do to the Norman conquests? And I don't mean Norman Shapiro, the Norman conquests. How about the northern Italian immigrants who came to Sicily in the wake of the Norman conquest with the express purpose to establish Catholicism in Sicily at the expense of the Greek Orthodox and Arab Muslim communities? And don't forget that the Arabs, particularly the Arab Muslims, had ruled and settled in Sicily prior to the Norman period. And like the Norman invaders, most of the Arabs were men who married local Sicilian women. And so you have to look into that, why many Sicilian people actually have Arabic blood in their veins. Many other native Sicilians, by the way, converted to Islam in order to escape persecution for being Christians. I don't know if you know about that. And so you have to ask yourself, looking at the story of conquest and invasion and conversion, where do we stand as Americans today? Are we, in fact, being conquered today, and by whom? And is it occurring through war? The answer is, of course not. It's occurring by law. In the past, it would have had to occur by war. Now it's occurring by law. All of the good liberals who have never fired a Daisy BB gun have, in essence, begun to conquer you in America by using the law. You see, the power of the law book is so powerful that the law is stronger than the war, especially if you're a patsy. But what choice do we really have? After all, we're all law-abiding citizens. The law be damned, and the law is an ass. Nevertheless, we all follow every little law written by the lawyers, no matter how verminous they are. And if you look inside the Obama administration, what you see are an awfully high number of lawyers, all communists, and all czars, all put there with one thought in mind. Change their mind, change their society, brainwash the children, change the hearts, change the minds, own the next generation. That's all you got to know is you're watching a Maoist-like revolution occurring right before your eyes, and without a shot being fired, you're being conquered. That's my opinion. It's one man's opinion. If you have an opinion that differs than mine, you can call like the guy Steve from Vermont. His logical faculties, if they ever existed, are no more. Why? Because he's been brainwashed by liberalism. He can't even make a simple jump in logic. He can't even put two and two together. If I say Obama is not qualified to handle the economy because he never ran a business, this guy Steve from Vermont calls and says, well, Patton never ran a business either. Does that make sense to you if you have a logical capacity? No, it makes no sense. Because the reason Patton was a competent general and was made a general in World War II is because he was an extremely competent army officer in World War I. You can't tell me Obama was made into a general, made president, because he had such a distinguished career as a U.S. senator. I mean, he achieved so many things as U.S. senator. Can you name one? When he was president at all, nobody knows what he voted for. But that, I guess, qualified him to be president. And, of course, since he did nothing as president, that qualified him for a Nobel Prize in nothingness but grandiosity. At least it's one man's opinion.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore. When the world seems to shine like you've had too much wine, that's amore. Bells will ring, ting-a-ling-a-ling, ting-a-ling-a-ling, and you'll sing Vita Bella.
It is Italian Heritage Day on the Savage Nation, better known as Columbus Day, where Columbus is being badmouthed by unreliable communist drug addict teachers. All right, go to the high for a minute. We went to the low, we're going to the high. Give him a little high. President who has made a mockery of the Nobel Prize by accepting it. And the danger here is that if he actually believes that he deserves it, that's the real danger we're in. Welcome to the Savage Nation. We are talking about Italian Heritage Day because the society we're living in is revising history as we speak. with Marxists in every educational venue you can imagine, including the NEA, trying to badmouth Columbus, telling you and your children he was a bad man, and in so doing, conversely telling you that all Native Americans were superior. Now, as we well know, there's no such thing as any particular superiority in any one race over another. And you can't say that all races are one thing or all races are another. As my mother would say in plain English, there are good and bad in all people. That's what I was taught. And then the older I've gotten, the more it's turned out to be true. That doesn't mean, though, that we have to sit here and put up with the rubbish that the communists are putting out and the rubbish they're feeding our children. So if I have the gift of this microphone and if I'm still willing to struggle every day to get up on the air and do this, then I'm going to spend it in good stead learning and teaching. And I'm going to teach today about Italian heritage and the contributions of the Italian people over the years. We don't have to focus on The Godfather because there's too much of that garbage put out by the filmmakers who want to make a quick buck. And I've enjoyed those movies as much as you have. But you can easily get caught up in it and start to live in the, you know, think that the stereotype is what it is. If you want to call on this subject, go ahead, 1-800-449-8255. If you want to read a little bit and educate yourself, that would go for anyone in the 49 states except Vermont. You can go to michaelsavage.com and link to an article on Kennewick Man, which is a very important story that almost nobody except people and maybe a few people left in the educated masses understand existed because it came and went in July of 96, but I have a photographic memory for important things. I can't say I remember everything as well. I remember important things very well, almost on an X-ray level. And July 96, they found skeleton down in Kennewick, Washington, and archaeologists wanted to study him. And the Native American tribes, five Northwestern tribes, with a lawyer, by the way, from New York, a lawyer, sued under the NAGPRA Act, the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act, immediately wanting to rebury the skeleton. For why? Why would they want to immediately rebury him? Because they wanted to make sure that no one else could prove that someone may have predated the tribes. That's all. That way the sacred, you know, the sin, whatever. You know the whole story already. I have to fill in the details. But if you think I'm making it up, go to michaelsavage.com. I linked up to the National Endowment for the Humanities in order for you to educate yourself on the subject of Kennewick Man. That's all. You know, sometimes the truth hurts. I admit that. The truth hurts. I realize that. And truth is a difficult thing, very difficult. Today I went to a store. I was on my bicycle. I was bored. I went into like a knick-knack store, like a chain, mirrors and pictures and this. I asked myself, who buys it? Everyone buys a house, an apartment. They have a book table, like remaindered books at full price. So I was bored. I looked at one. I picked it up. I had to buy it. How to Traumatize Your Children, the Self-Hurt Series. And for me to lay out $10 for a remaindered book, I said, wow, this is funny. This is funny, How to Traumatize Your Children. And I'm going to read you some. Stages of Best Friend Parenting in Utero. Start buying paraphernalia for all the things you'd like to do with your child, like a baseball mitt while they're in the womb. Infancy. Call your child Little Buddy. Start talking to your child about your feelings, even though she can't understand what you're saying. When your child is a baby, make sure your child still sleeps in your bed, at least through toddlerhood. Whenever your child cries, run to her saying, I'll never leave you. Toddler, remember, this is a book, How to Traumatize Your Children, and you should say how to turn a child into a liberal. 4, buy identical outfits for yourself and your child when they're toddlers. Decline to enroll your child in preschool. That would be too much time away from you. When they're finally a child, take your child out of school some days just so the two of you can do fun stuff together. When the child becomes an adolescent, start getting to know your child's friends. When she has sleepovers, stay up late with the gang and get them to confide in you about things they never tell their own parents. Do whatever it takes to be identified as the fun one. When they're a teenager, introduce your child to drinking and drugs, if that's what you enjoy doing, or at the very least, condone it because it's cool. Does this sound like liberals in Vermont? When they're young adults, resent the fact that your child may be striking out on her own and stage mini breakdowns to bring her back to your side. When they're adults, do whatever you can to make your child move back in with you and tell her that neither of you needs anybody else. You remember how many times I have told you that you're not supposed to be your child's best friend? Remember that? How many people think that you're supposed to be your child's best friend? They don't want a best friend. They want a parent. They want a mentor. They want a role model, not a best friend. So this book is very funny. It's also about indulging children, how you turn them into psycho-liberals from, you know, NYU, basically. That's what it comes down to. Let's see. There's this other stuff. I can't find it right now. I was laughing on the bicycle. You know, basically, it's the child. I wish I could find the one that I was with. Where they're in the utero, where you start playing, like, classical music when the child's in the uterus to think that that's going to influence them. You know, with the liberal thing? They think they're a porpoise. They think that their infant is like the uterus is a porpoise. You see all of the doughy-eyed liberal mothers sitting there listening to, like, classical music thinking that the child hears it and it's going to affect them. Yeah, it'll affect them. It'll turn them into a czar for Obama. That's what it'll turn them into, thinking that it's superior to everybody else, anyone who might listen to Dean Martin, for example. Oh, God. Let's see what else. You want to call on any of this or what? Rodney, Sacramento, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Dr. Savage, I wanted to make a comment in reference to race. I think it's a myth. In the year 2009, I don't think there's hardly anybody that's of one race. And furthermore...
Let's take that one statement on face value. Why don't you tell that to the Chinese and see what they say to you?
I'm sorry?
I'll repeat it again. That statement you just made, why don't you tell that to the Chinese and see what they say to you?
Say again?
Why do I have to say it again? What are you, deaf? I said it already twice. It's enough. That's enough already. What are you breaking my you-know-whats? You know what I mean? Say it again. Go see what the Chinese government says about that. See what you think about their reaction. That's all. Of course we know about conquests and mixtures. We understand all of that. But go tell that to the Chinese government and see what they tell you. There's no such thing as a race. Ask them why they have such a keen view of their own people. I'm not an ignoramus when it comes to these things. I studied it more than you have. Stephen in West Palm Beach, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Dr. Savage. Yeah, the Chinese don't do it because, you know, their kids don't drive around in Escalades watching SpongeBob SquarePants on the little TV, you know? They actually know what it means to have some...
Well, I'm sorry to tell you that the Chinese communist regime doesn't view their race as the same as every race on Earth. Let me put it to you that way. And if you don't know how they view themselves, then you know nothing about the world you're living in and the danger we're in. Let's go a step further. Go take that man's statement to Saudi Arabia and ask the Saudis if they think there's no such thing as a pure race. See what the Saudis say about that.
You're absolutely right there, Dr. Savage. Now, the thing I was calling in about is you're like my uncle I wish I had when I was a kid, that I could just sit back and say, oh, God, he's going off the deep end again, but then I just want to come back for more. That's like
what you have to mean. Well, I said that for years. I'm like the uncle of the Savage Nation. The uncle that used to come to dinner on Sundays, and that you couldn't wait for him to leave because he was so opinionated, but you couldn't win because he was always right. And that you couldn't wait for him to leave the dinner, and by Wednesday you couldn't wait for the dinner again.
That's right. And in the spirit of today, I'm cooking some Italian food right now. I'm cooking some spaghetti. And I wanted to ask you, since it is, we're celebrating Italians, what's your dish? What should you tell us out there?
Oh, my God. You know, what is Italian food is the real question. Because, you know, you talk about a mixture of cultures. It's very difficult to find a cuisine today that really is an authentic cuisine. I once wrote an entire book on this, on ethnic cuisine. And the more I studied it, the more I discovered that there's almost no such thing as an authentic ethnic cuisine, particularly in America today. Let me give you an example. Let's start with the obvious. You take Jewish food. What is Jewish food? You think it's corned beef? You think it's brisket? You think it's gefilte fish? Wrong. Those are specific holiday foods of 19th century Europe. Nothing to do with Jews in the ancestral homeland of the Arabian Peninsula or the Middle East. If you were to look for authentic Jewish food, you'd have to eat Yemeni food. Yemeni food is authentic Jewish food. How many Jews eat food like that? Near zero. So now let's go to the next. You say, I'm going to have an Italian meal tonight. And what are you going to have for an Italian meal? I'm going to have veal la parmesan, and I'm going to have a spaghetti, then I'm going to have a spumoni ice cream or whatever the dessert is. Well, none of those things are Italian. Again, they're 19th century Italian holiday food festivals. The average Italian didn't eat those foods. You have to go back to, did I love studying this when I studied it. It was one of my favorite investigations, this whole thing of ethnic foods. And you will find that there is a commonality in most cultures with regard to their original ethnic diet. And it was usually the following. It was a high grain diet, a high vegetable diet with small amounts of animal protein, period. End of story. With rare exception, and I mean, you have to set it in history. We're talking about how many thousands of years ago. I'm going to go back to prehistory or 20,000 years ago, 200,000 years ago. I'm going back several thousand years, as far as we have to go right now. Almost all cultures traditionally ate high grain diets, usually whole grains, because that's what they had, a large amount of vegetables when they could get them in season, and small amounts of animal protein because they didn't have large herds of animals. And they certainly didn't want to kill the animal that was producing milk and dairy. They needed the milk to make cheese and other dairy products. They didn't kill the animal for the meat. Okay, this whole concept of livestock is a rather recent phenomenon. So what we're eating is a complete distortion of the Neolithic man that's within all of us. Remember, you haven't changed genetically from the Neolithic man that we have evolved from. And someone wrote a book years ago, The Neolithic Diet, that was very clever, in fact. And the fact is the Neolithic diet is totally different than the one we're on right now. The Neolithic, and so then there are rare exceptions. For example, take the Greenland Eskimo who eats a traditional diet. The Greenland Eskimo lives on almost large amounts of blubber, seals, whale meat, and such. And they have amongst the lowest rate of heart attack in the human beings. Are these people. You say, how could that be? My Uncle Mo got a heart attack and the cardiologist put him on a low-fat diet. Yes, well, we discovered this. Low-fat, no vitamins, that's quackery, and that'll make sure that your other arteries are closed so you can be back in 6 months for another clean-out. You know, we have enough with lawyers who steam people up against each other and look for their next case in order to cause trouble between people in order to build up their business. Let me tell you something. The doctors are not too far behind. Well, how do you explain a guy gets a heart attack, he goes to a cardiologist, pay no attention to vitamins, they don't know what they're talking about. Come in again in 6 months, we'll clean out the fourth artery. How many times did they teach you about the discoveries of great men like McCulley at Harvard in 1952 with vitamin B6? You don't even know what I'm talking about because the doctors themselves never studied it. I'm lucky because I did study it. I'm very lucky that I had the leisure to study it. And I'm also lucky that I have the leisure right now to not worry about ratings, not worry about anything except learning and teaching right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Celebrating Italian Heritage Day on the Savage Nation because the communist schools are now bashing Columbus. I'm doing my little thing here. As I said to you, if you want to see who was running the country today, the kind of liberal mind and how they were evolved, I found this little book, Help Me Gun, a little throwaway book, How to Traumatize Your Children. I thought it was hilarious. So it's like sarcastic. Stages of pushing. It may as well be a playbook of how the Congress was raised. One, in utero, play classical music for the fetus by putting Bose headphones on the pregnant belly. Read books on child development and map out your child's future. Apply to preschools. Infancy, play books on tape in foreign languages while your infant naps. I mean, is this liberal or what? Right? And look what they wind up doing. They all work for the government. Three, when your child's a baby, teach sign language so your baby can communicate before the speech area of her brain develops. As a toddler, put golf clubs, violins, or picture-free books in your child's hands. Call your child little man or little lady and react to childish behavior with ridicule. When they're a child, expose your child to a wide range of activities until no minute is unscheduled, or focus your child on only one activity so that he might become world-class. Adolescent, argue with teachers and coaches who want to hold your child back. Hire tutors to compensate for shortcomings at your child's school and begin prepping for the SATs. Teen, consult a college counselor at the beginning of high school and choose your child's target school. Plot out the extracurricular grades, blah, blah, blah. Young adult, have your child's college grades sent to your home. If your child did not get into a top school, explore transfer possibilities. Make sure your child maintains her weight. You get the picture? That's who's running America today. All liberals raised by Dr. Spock's methods. Every last one of them thinks that they are better than the rest of the world, and they all deserve Nobel Prizes.
Savage.
C'è una luna mezzumata, mamma mia, mamma di dare. Figlia mia, cosa dare, mamma mia, pensacci tu.
No, I wouldn't put this in the class of Dante or Da Vinci or Caruso, but all right, whatever. Whatever gets your attention. We are celebrating Columbus Day on the Savage Nation, which I know you'll ever call Italian Heritage Day, because the communists in the schools are debasing Columbus's great navigational skills. Put aside everything else, okay? Of course there were excesses that followed from the conquest by the Spanish and the Portuguese. We understand that. Horrible. Horrible is no explaining it. Man's inhumanity to man. So today we'll focus on man's humanity rather than man's inhumanity to man. Does that work for you? In fact, this morning I was playing with words, and I wrote a little couple of lyrics for Columbus the Hitman. I haven't figured out what music play behind it yet. And here's what I wrote. There once was a queen, and she was quite mean. She was surrounded by a bunch of dilettantes, it seems. So outside of Spain, she had to look. She went to the boot, and Columbus she took. On Nina, on Pinta, on Santa Maria. He went to the New World, and then Mamma Mia. Discovered America, conquered the Indians. Columbus the first hitman in liberals' opinions. Columbus was not an explorer, but a hitman, if you buy the whole communist line and liberal bit, man. Anyway, I started with it. You got to forgive me. I realize I'm not on par with the Fox News geniuses, but it's the best I can do. Houston, Texas. John, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Dr. Savage, for bringing up the Kennewick Man. What happened to the Kennewick Man and what's going on to all the bodies that are stored in the museums around the country is a real crime against science. And I believe in 50 or 60 years we'll look back at this as being an absolute destruction of...
Well, are you a geologist, John?
Yes, sir, I am.
And you know that they immediately reburied Kennewick Man in order to hide the fact that he was of Caucasian descent.
Yes, sir. The crime that to me is that there's been a big push to go away from the idea that there's been at least four different invasions of North and South America from Asia, not just the last one that we see, because everyone always thinks Clovis first, but there's been at least four to five different intrusions by humans. So, you know, and none of the tribes that are personally where they are or have been there more than a couple hundred years at most.
Mm-hmm. So why would it be in the interest? Why do you think the tribes, the five American Indian tribes who used the New York lawyer from NYU, wanted that skeleton reburied immediately, Kennewick Man?
Well, it's really, to me, it seems like a reparations racket, because they've got to establish some claim on this land, but it's not really theirs, because if you look through tribal history, tribes come and go, and they get pushed out, because most of the tribes that we know from the Western Plains during the settlement times in the 1800s weren't there. They've been pushed from the east to there, and they had to replace those.
Right, well, this was mainly the Umatilla tribe pushed this. There were others. And you're saying the tribal claims would be diminished somewhat if it could be shown that there was a different group present prior to the arrival of their own ancestors, right?
Well, absolutely, because you have to look at the fact that most of what we consider to be Native Americans are what replaced a previous set of populations.
Let me ask you, as a geologist today, you're pressured by the new communist government to look aside at the facts, aren't you? All of geology now has to prove what the czars wanted to prove.
Well, yeah, we see in the Gulf of Mexico and in on land drilling that we're really extremely restricted. And to me, I've drilled all over West Texas and, you know, across the West, and we do an absolutely great environmental, you know, stewardship. We clean up land. It's as good shape as we found it. But what disturbs me greatly is when I see these windmills come in, and they have no environmental restrictions, and they just bulldoze and leave big piles of debris.
Wait, when you see who comes in?
The windmill people that put these wind turbines out in West Texas, they come in and they don't have any restrictions like we do.
Oh, well, no. They're the sacred cow. They're the green energy people. They can destroy anything they want.
Oh, they bulldoze big sections?
Oh, sure. Well, we know how sensitive liberals are to their own horse manure.
Oh, it's horrible.
Well, my friend, I'm glad we have such an educated man. John, stay on the line. At least you'll get a copy of Banned in Britain. I have 300 or so copies left of the first printing. You're going to be one of the recipients of this important document, the Magna Carta of Free Speech. You know, I gave you the example earlier of Sicily, colonized by the Greeks in the 8th century. After the Greeks, there was another invasion of Sicily. and that was by the Carthaginians, if I'm not mispronouncing it. I mangle words, by the way. After that came another invasion. The Germanic tribe invaded Sicily, known as the Vandals, in 440 A.D., and they conquered. See, why is there so many different phenotypes of Sicilians? They're not all, you know, blonde, redhead, et cetera, because of the invasions. So we're showing you had the Greeks, then the next from South North Africa. Then you had a Germanic tribe known as the Vandals took over. And then after that, that wasn't the end of it. Another East Germanic tribe came in the form of the Goths into Sicily. And then the Lombards came in the 6th century into Sicily. And Latin was then supplanted by the Greek language. So you see, you look back, and you go on and on, the Byzantine emperor, and then the Byzantine fleet invades Sicily, and then things change again. And by the way, foods change along the way, too, interestingly enough. Because, remember, we were talking about cuisine before, and I said, well, what is Sicilian food or what is Italian food? Well, you have to look at what period you're talking about. Because agricultural items change with the different groups that came in as well. Oranges, lemons, pistachio, sugar cane was brought to Italy by the Byzantines into Sicily. You say, was that Italian food? It depends where you begin. And then, of course, comes the Muslim rulers. And then you have the 11th century Norman mercenaries come in. They were Christian descendants of the Vikings. And that explains another different phenotype that arrives, and a different cuisine arrives and takes another turn. The Sicilian food takes another turn. And on and on and on. So you say, well, what are you trying to say by showing this microcosm of Sicily and the invaders? I'm trying to show you that America, which is known as a melting pot, has long been an amalgamation of many cultures. But in the past, as the cultures arrived, they tried to assimilate by becoming Americans. They learned English. Even if they spoke it with an accent, they were proud to learn English. I know that was true with my grandparents and great-grandparents. But today it's a whole different story. They're acting more like conquerors rather than immigrants who want to assimilate. I know this is anathema to the communist liberals who want to destroy America and her noble heritage. I understand that. They don't want to hear this. They want to silence this truth. But the truth they're going to get as so long as I'm on the radio. And that is not so much a challenge as it is a fact of reality. You're not going to change history simply because you turn the microphone off for Michael Savage. Just as they could ban me from Britain, they're not going to ban my book. The book's coming out. They may have turned the video, they may have turned off the appearance at Cambridge for Thursday, but I'm going to read the speech I would have given on this show right here on this local station on Thursday. You can record it and you can send it to Britain. And until that pillhead is thrown out of office, when freedom of speech is once again restored to England. But getting back to our country, as I say, in the past, immigrants came. They were proud of their heritage, but they couldn't wait to become Americans. Today, unfortunately, we've got people who won't even bother speaking English. We're becoming a Tower of Babel. And we don't know how this ends. I mean, there's historical examples of where this ends, and it's never good. Never good when you don't require that immigrants study the language of the land and at least have a putative knowledge of the history of the land that they've been invited into. Never a good result. Never. Now we go on to the Savage Nation. A couple of years ago, maybe in the 80s, I don't know when it was, I was flying in a thunderstorm over Cheyenne, Wyoming, in the days when you could still drink on an airplane during a thunderstorm over Cheyenne, Wyoming. In other words, they didn't stop serving drinks. We got into a thunderstorm. Everyone was screaming, and I decided that if we're going to go down, I may as well go down happily. So I ordered two more little bottles of vodka. And I was having a good time as the plane was bucking around over Cheyenne, Wyoming. And I started to write. And what I wrote was, when pasta was spaghetti, which I'm now going to play for you on the Savage Nation. Go ahead.
The hairy forearms of New York serve you your coffee with a turning gesture. An offering that says drink, eat, enjoy. The wiry Italian in Vincent's clam bar, the one behind the greased over register, the young kid connected who receives his deference from the spaghetti cook older than his gangster father, the spaghetti cook who looks like an old-fashioned doctor from the Bronx with clipped mustache. He actually pulls some noodles out of the pot and eats them as they cook, looking to the grimy ceiling for his tender answer. Well, they used to call it spaghetti. Now it's pasta at $10 a plate. The smoky windows of Romeo's Spaghetti now offers radios and knickknacks. It was 50 cents a plate then. In neon letters that you couldn't miss, even through a fogged over window on a cold winter's eve, there was life. Marinara sauce that smacked to the sea. Noodles as long as your young arm. Meatballs as fluffy as your dream of them. Bread on the table you'd eat against your parents' admonitions that the meal was coming, the meal was coming. And men, some burly with black hairy forearms whose smile scared you, and little skinny guys with the look of murder on their faces, and people who slurped their spaghetti straight to their mouths from the plate, one motion like Chinese shoveling rice at mouth with clicking sticks. That was gusto before it became a beer ad. That was taste before it became a synonym for fashion. That was spaghetti before it became pasta. Well, that's when pasta was spaghetti. I know some Italian-American friends who once invited me to an Italian museum way back in the 80s, in the 90s rather, to read that. I thought that was very, very good. And I hope it's brought you some pleasure today on Italian Heritage Day, right here on WEV, no, on Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Joe and Paul, la storia farginica, bravarella Joe and Paul, that let you billy creek.
We're not ready for that. Cut it out. Murdoch considering NBC buy. See, anything's allowed in America. One man will control everything in the media, and then you'll have absolutely no knowledge of the truth. See, what did I tell you about Fox News? What did I tell you? Now he's going to buy NBC? Can you imagine? Unbelievable. Look at Schwarzenegger on the Drudge Report. God, am I glad I never used steroids. Look at those hanging pecs. I always knew that as a kid when I was working out, when I started at 16 with weights. There were guys already using, like, weird supplements. I remember the guys. I was warned, like, what an old weightlifter comes to look like. Think Schwarzenegger with the guy needs a man bra. I mean, it's terrible. Where do you think all that muscle goes when the muscle mass leaves you? You wind up with a horrible-looking body. You know, whatever goes up must come down. Let's put it to you that way. Dems scramble after warning from health insurers about the prices, or they're scrambling. I'd rather talk about the Carthaginians, frankly, than talk about health reform, to be frank with you. I am so sick of the health reform lie, the socialized medicine. I'd rather talk about when the Muslims conquered Sicily, what they did to the people. You don't know about that? Oh, the polite history lessons about the religion of peace? You don't know about any of that? You can't read about any of that? Not a lot of certain rules from the Quran? Well, let me cite one of them. There were native Christians in Sicily that were allowed nominal freedom of religion as long as they paid a tax to the Muslim rulers. And the tax was called a jaziva. That's a tax on kafirs or non-Muslims. You hear this? You didn't read that one in your little grade school booklet on the religion of peace? When the Muslims conquered Sicily, the native Christians were allowed nominal freedom of religion as long as they paid their jaziva. That's a tax on kafirs. Imposed by Muslim rulers. That was a tax for the right to practice your own religion. So there it is. Well, don't read any of that, though. It's uncomfortable, particularly if you live in Vermont and you send your children to the little red communist schoolhouse. You don't want to know what's actually going on around you. All you want to know is Democrat, Republican, Republican, Democrat. Follow the bouncing ball. Which team are you on? The D team or the R team? How about the team called Truth? Does the T-Tream interest you at all? Robert in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation.
How you doing, Michael? I just want to say that what the Muslims did for Sicily was they put a lot of raisins in their food. You know, red sauce.
There you go.
All with raisins is this big, big thing in Sicily.
I don't like raisins in any of my food, by the way. I can't stand it. Whenever I see that in San Francisco, I don't like sweetening agents in my food.
Called it before. I actually had like a what's typical Italian food. Often it deals with seafood. Like what I had tonight was actually a Sicilian style thing with olive oil, sardines, onions. It's like whatever they could get their hands on because they're all broke. So you know, you're
that's right. Well, I tell you the truth. You look at you go to Spain, for example, and you see what a paella really was. A paella was a mixture of anything that the guys had that they caught in the scene. They threw it together with rice and tomatoes, and that was paella. Today they make it into a big deal, but the guys cooked it quickly over an open fire in a large iron pot that could take high heat of wood, a wood fire.
Now it it's gourmet cuisine.
Well, it's like Italian bouillabaisse, okay? What do you call bouillabaisse, the Italian version of it? I know I get it in North Beach. I love it down at either Aliotta's or the North Beach restaurant. What do you call it, the Italian version of bouillabaisse? There's a word for it.
I don't know what bouillabaisse is.
Well, the Sicilians call it cacciucco. I mean, I knew a guy who had a restaurant. He called it cacciucco. Cioppino is Italian bouillabaisse. But what it really is anything that they caught that day, they threw in there in a fisherman's stew, right?
Yep, that's how it works.
Simple food is the answer. Simple food is always the most elegant food and the most difficult to make. It's very easy to make complex dishes because basically it's camouflaged bad food. You ever turn on these cooking shows? You ever see what they use in the food? Overuse of salt, overuse of butter, overuse of cream. And what do you wind up with? You wind up with heart attack food. That's not real food. That's not ethnic cuisine. Anyway, we'll go back to the news of the day here. Global warming, anyone? While you got your mukluks on and your overcoat for the early onset of winter? Don't tell that to Al Gore. They shut the microphone off. You heard that one? A man got up during Al Gore, someone got up to ask a question about the errors in Al Gore's film. It's a long story. And Gore's giving a speech, the head of the Gorleone crime family, and he's talking about climate change with so-called environmental journalists, which are just basically pot-headed lunatics in Madison, Wisconsin. So Madison, as you well know, unto itself is a laughing stock. And Gore is giving a speech at the Society of Environmental Journalists at the hotel. And he's just saying, we're almost near the tipping point of the climate change debate. And he's going on, and someone gets up, and they start asking questions. One of them gets up and asks a question about the Inconvenient Truth movie that he made that was a fake. In fact, it was challenged in a British court by a truck driver in England because it was full of lies, and an English court found that the movie had to come with an explanation because they were fake. So an Irish filmmaker gets up here in Madison, Wisconsin, asks Gore to address the 9 errors in his film identified by a British court in 2007. Do you know what happens? His microphone is cut off by the fair-minded liberals at Madison, Wisconsin. Can you believe this? Madison, Wisconsin, they cut off the microphone the way communists used to cut off microphones from anybody who brought up a different point of view. That's the new America. That's the Democrat America. That's Al Gorleone. That's the Obama administration. And that's what you're going to expect from liberals trying to shove a health insurance destruction bill down your throat and then a climate change bill down your throat and then amnesty for 30 million illegal aliens down your throat. And you'll wake up one day, you'll be a prisoner in your own country if you're not already. 1-800-449-8255. Be sure to visit michaelsavage.com. Absolutely be sure to visit it. If not for any other reason than to see the story on Kennebunk, man, because it's only going to be up for a day and then we're taking it down. I put it up, it's funny, because I was reviewing what to put up on the website today. And I recalled in 96 they discovered the skeleton in Kennewick, Washington. It was an embarrassment because the features were that of a Caucasian rather than Native American. And immediately the 5 Native American tribes sued using a lawyer from Columbia, NYU. By the way, not of any Native American origin, just a lawyer. A good lawyer, who's a disgrace to his people going back thousands of years, who defied the Bible itself to become a lawyer. And the lawyer from NYU sues, and they rebury the skeleton before it can truly be studied. And that's, of course, to make certain that the story goes on and on, the storyline that's been written, just like the storyline of a global warming. They could be freezing to death, and they'll still be pushing this lie because there's so much money at stake. Make no mistake about it. The only people who are pushing the global warming lie are those who are heavily invested in the results. And by the way, Al Gorleone received a $600 million loan from Obama to build a car plant in Finland. Take that to the bank, Johnson.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content,
psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Today we're talking about Alfred E. Obama from Mad Comic Running America winning the Nobel Prize. As you well know, this is some have said it's an undeserved accolade that has a high probability of backfire. Others have been less generous and called it the first affirmative action Nobel Prize, which I disagree with. There have been many others. But it's along the lines of a liberal parent doing a child's homework and the child getting an A for the homework. Are they kidding? It's unbelievable to me. Obama is the ultimate spoiled child who's had everything handed to him, and now the Nobel Prize. It's funny, I have in my hands a book I found in a gift shop called How to Traumatize Your Children. Kind of a sarcastic book on humor, written almost against liberalism, but it isn't. And it's all about how to spoil a child. Start him young. Your child is the center of the world. Should you be an indulger? Your child, your mirror. And it's really amazing, but it applies to the narcissism of Obama. It's funny. Results for the narcissistically parented child. If you work hard to make sure your children know it's all about you, there's so much to look forward to in their adulthood. Your ungrateful offspring will be characterized by the following useful traits. They will seek acceptance from others at their own expense. They may become narcissists themselves. They may have under or overdeveloped boundaries. They have a dampened sense of self. Now you say, well, what does it have to do with Obama? Well, I don't know. The stages of neglect and how to traumatize your children are as follows. In utero, don't bother changing your diet or smoking, drinking, and drug habits just because you're pregnant. For fathers, pregnancy is an ideal time to leave without a forwarding address. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? The next stage of neglect would occur in the infancy of a child. Because your child can't yet get herself out of the crib, go out and run some errands when you've put her down for a nap. If you run into a friend, find a cafe or bar and settle in for a long chat. And things like that. You get the picture. So stages of neglect. I mean, it's very funny. Here are the stages of indulgence on how to traumatize your children practiced by all liberal parents. It seems it goes to the highest levels of government today. In utero, decorate the nursery with stuffed animals and toys your child will not need for years. Buy multiple cute outfits for your child to grow into. 2. Infant. Don't put your child on any kind of sleep or eating schedule. 3. Baby. Whenever your child cries, pick her up. 4. As a toddler. If your toddler has a tantrum, give her whatever she wants. Rather than asking her to help you pick up her toys, clean up after her, no bedtime. 5. As a child, take your child to malls and toy stores and let her have whatever she wants. If she wants you to stay home with her when you have plans, cancel your plans, no bedtime. As an adolescent, allow your child to attend concerts and stay out late. Don't put any limits on her television watching. If her grades suffer, bribe her with clothing or electronics or just let the grades slip. Sound familiar, doesn't it? Let's keep going. You'll hear the class we have now running the country. As teens, your child will probably not want to participate in any family activities such as dinner or gatherings. Let her do whatever she wants and don't enforce any kind of curfew. As a young adult, whenever your child gets into trouble, bail her out. Send her money whenever she requests it. As an adult, give her a Nobel Prize for doing nothing. I added that one. You get the picture. I mean, this is the ultimate liberalism here in the minds of even liberals. People are shocked. Even communists are shocked by this. As I said, giving him a Nobel Prize is an embarrassment, and it's going to backfire on him. And the president is now subject to sarcasm, laughter. In other words, he's an empty suit. This is an empty suit president. And it's amazing now how people now, the liberals and the media, are saying, well, it's for his possibilities. That would be like taking a kid who can hardly throw a ball and giving him the Heisman Trophy, saying he might one day be a great athlete. What is next?
What is next for this arrogant man?
President of the world is the only thing left that I can think of.
What world?
Good point.
The dollar is reaching a breaking point. All the countries are wanting to bail out of the dollar, and this jerk keeps printing money. Him and that schmuck from Harvard, Council of Economic Advisors, who've never run a hot dog stand. Another putz from Berkeley they took, a college professor. She never had a business in her life. Council of Economic Advisors. They're all left-wing professors. They don't know the first thing about balancing a budget.
Maybe he's trying to be the Dalai Lama.
Dollar Lama? He's trying to be the Dollar Lama? Obama really wants to be the Dollar Lama. That's pretty good. How do you like this? North Korea fires 5 short-range missiles, and our Navy is having dress rehearsals for what to do if North Korea fires 5 short-range missiles. How about in Britain? They're selling off state assets to balance the budget. Gordon Brown, the pillhead, is selling off assets.
Yeah, including the rails and the tube to France and the channel.
You're selling the channel. How about Maurice Sendak, the author of Wild Things, that horrible fiction that scared children for decades? Sendak says he doesn't care if the movie is too scary for kids. He says parents can, quote, go to hell. That just came out. And the mayor of Sacramento came to San Francisco and he got robbed in Union Square. He was helping an elderly man into a cab when he turned around. His suitcase and his suit was stolen. It's unbelievable. In San Francisco, while Newsom, any twosome nuisance, wants to be the governor. So you read the blogs about that. They say we call that a visitation tax.
Well, if Newsom gets his way, the mayor won't have to leave Sacramento for him to get robbed, I suppose.
Yeah, he can bring the crime that he has in the city and the murders to the state level. Isn't that wonderful?
That's right. That's right.
How about the health care bill? Nancy Pelosi's slush fund. Democrat-backed health care bill scheduled to go before the Senate tomorrow would increase a typical health insurance policy by thousands of dollars a year. $1,700 a year to the cost of family coverage and more than $600 bucks for a single person, according to insurers. How do you like that one?
That's right. I think it's going to cost $800.
Well, that's chicken feed for Nancy Pelosi. Look what she just spent. No one even knows where it went. And here's another beauty. This is one that you're going to love. Columbus, who discovered America. Now the communists in the classroom are teaching how evil Columbus was, the dark side of Columbus. You mean the Native Americans were all sweetness and light? They skinned each other alive when they caught them. They caught another tribe, they skinned them alive and raped their daughters and then hung them from a doorpost. I mean, they're glorifying the noble savage. I just love it. They found him guilty and sentenced him to life in prison. He was a bad guy. You hear this? How could he discover America if there were already people living here? The answer is because the people living here were here for 10,000 years and did nothing but slaughter each other and kill buffalo. If they're teaching the hateful side of Columbus, why don't they teach the hateful side of De Soto, Cortez, and the other Spanish conquistadores who enslaved the Native Americans of Central America and South America? How come that's not taught? Senator Feinstein wants additional troops. Guess they can get additional shopping carts into the airport in Kabul that way, huh? Think about it. 40,000 troops will need another 40,000 shopping carts in Kabul. So that's good for Feinstein's husband if he supplies the shopping carts. Immigration made your America strong, but it threatens to ruin Europe. No kidding. Londonistan, anyone? There was a great editorial over the weekend yesterday that nobody saw by Jeff Kuhner called Silencing Savage. And I'm not going to read the whole thing to you because you've heard it all before, but hey, it's an important story. Freedom of speech is under assault. Michael Savage, America's third most popular radio talk show host, is being assaulted. And he tells the whole story. It's worth reading. It's up on my website, michaelsavage.com. And he ends with this. He says, Islamic fundamentalism is taking root in the land of Shakespeare and the Magna Carta. Already England has more than 85 courts that adhere to Sharia. London is slowly being transformed into Londonistan. Britain's answer is to silence the likes of Mr. Savage, hoping this will placate the growing monster within its midst. It will not work. It will only whet the limitless appetite of the radical Islamists who hunger for imperial expansion and cultural domination. Conservatives of all stripes should rally in defense of Mr. Savage's right to speak freely. His struggle is our struggle. If we abandon him now, we risk eventually jeopardizing our very own sacred freedoms. Jeffrey T. Kuhner, columnist for the Washington Times, president of the Edmund Burke Institute, a Washington-based think tank. No, there's no need to cover a thing like this. You know, it's not an important story. What's important is
you know, which slut fell down on Sunset Boulevard for Fox News.
Savage.
Talking with Iran about nuclear weapons seems to be a big priority for this administration. Talk, talk, talk. Recent talks seem to be more appeasement than negotiations. Joining us now is Ken Timmerman, who's been following the story.
Michael, the results of this nuclear negotiation between the United States and Iran are truly troubling. It's hard to understand how the Obama administration can call this a success. I've listened to people like General Jones on network television and others go on glowingly about how they have made a very important progress with the Islamic Republic of Iran. And while they're cautious, they hope that things will get better in the weeks and the months to come. I think this is an illusion, and a very dangerous illusion at that. The Iranians had a great success, really, in Geneva. They ran circles around our negotiators. In my opinion, they gained several important victories against the United States. The first and foremost victory was that they managed to change the subject. The entire subject of the confrontation between the Islamic Republic of Iran and the rest of the world was Iran's continued defiance of the UN Security Council. And the Security Council had demanded Iran in several Security Council resolutions that they cease all enrichment activities in anything relating to nuclear weapons. Instead of discussing that in Geneva, they changed the subject. The Iranian regime succeeded in changing the subject, and we went along with it. So now, instead of trying to keep Iran from getting enriched uranium, the United States agreed to give them enriched uranium. It really doesn't make an awful lot of sense.
Well, what else did they so-called accomplish?
What they did was buy time. The Iranians now have managed to buy more negotiating time. El Baradei, the head of the IAEA, is going to Tehran. He's going to negotiate a possible inspection of this new weapon site or uranium enrichment site at Qom. That's going to take time. It'll take a while for the inspectors to get there. It's going to take many more weeks after that for them to write the reports, and it'll take many more weeks after that for the IAEA hierarchy to approve the report and to actually release it to the public, if they do at all. I don't think we've got all that much time, and I think this is really on a much shorter fuse than the Obama people seem to think it is. The Israelis have made it pretty clear that they are not going to wait very much longer. They see that Iran is on the verge of a nuclear weapons capability. And by the way, we learned just this past week from a leaked report from the International Atomic Energy that IAEA experts believe that Iran already has the technology to get to make a nuclear weapon, and they believe that they have hard evidence that Iran has been actively engaged in a nuclear weapons program. Now, this is significant because it goes beyond the uranium enrichment program they're involved in. The IAEA believes that they have actually been working to design a nuclear warhead that would fit on top of their Shahab-3 missile, the one that they designed to hit Israel. So the IAEA believes that Iran is developing a nuclear weapon, and yet their Secretary General, Mohammad El-Baradei, goes to Tehran and says, oh, we've made this great progress. The Iranians are now finally being transparent and are finally willing to talk. Really, this is Obama in Wonderland all over again. It's the IAEA, the blind leading the blind as we all walk off a cliff. This is a burning hot crisis in international affairs, and President Obama doesn't have a clue what's going on.
And what else do you think could go wrong here?
Well, if all of that weren't enough, Michael, now we have close advisors to the president talking about containment, containing Iran. Kenneth Pollack, who's someone who works at the Brookings Institution, has worked in White Houses for Democrats and Republicans, but is very close to this president and says he was an active cheerleader for Obama's policy of engagement. He says now that engagement is a pipe dream and the administration has to start thinking about containment. Well, the problem with this is that that means that they have to start living or thinking about how they're going to live with a nuclear-armed Iran. And I think that's not just an admission of U.S. failure and U.S. weakness, but it essentially shifts the burden of preventing a nuclear Iran onto Israel. Prime Minister Netanyahu, in his speech to the United Nations, made it very clear that Israel was not going to wait forever. He essentially asked the UN members if they were serious about world peace. And he said, if you are serious about world peace, then you must act on Iran. And he also made it pretty clear that if the UN, if the world powers do not work to stop Iran from getting nuclear weapons, Israel will. I don't think Israel is going to wait forever. My own guess from my sources is that perhaps they will wait until March or April of next year, but we don't have any more time than that. This clock is ticking very quickly now, and the Iranians are continuing, despite all this talk, they're continuing to enrich uranium, continuing to build new centrifuges, and continuing also on that warhead work at facilities we don't even know about.
Thanks for the update, Ken. I'm a big watcher of movies. I love fantasy. And it amazes me how often the punks of Hollywood play at being the outsider, the investigative reporter years ago, the man standing up to power, exposing things. And then, of course, they go back to their usual haunts, and they're nothing but conformist kids from Cleveland who are good mimics. How many rock musicians out there play at being the punk, the outsider, the wild one, the free one? In other words, we have an entire society in the arts of poseurs, because I am actually everything that they pretend to be. I, Michael Savage, am actually the person they're pretending to be in the movies. I'm the outsider they're pretending to sing about in the songs, and here I am, all alone on a microphone, speaking only to you, banned pretty much figure out. But they're not the issue. They're not the issue. Today it's me, tomorrow it's somebody else. The longer this silence goes on from the golfer and the others, the higher the possibility is that they will soon be next. Because if they can get away with this with me, they will be next. These people apparently are just shills for the Republican Party, which is why I was chosen. Why I was chosen. You know, many are called and few are chosen, but I have been chosen for this battle, and as I've told you, I didn't ask for it, but here it is.
Savage.
So-called health insurance destruction or reform is working its way through our superb Congress. Or should we say healthcare insurance reform? Big pharmaceuticals are once again involved in the so-called reform, to the point where under the latest bill, if you want to use natural or herbal remedies, it won't be approved under this plan for the people. Joining us now is Robert Scott Bell with an update on this.
Thanks, Michael. It's good to be back with you. And this time I'm sure to upset many of the sheeple out there in the mainstream of America that still believe the government is not involved enough in their health care. And that's the reason they can't afford it, can't get it, and are in so much trouble, when quite the opposite is the truth. The reality is government is so deeply embedded in, and involved with institutions like Big Pharma, in fact, that much of what is truly healthcare has been lost to something called, I call at least, disease management. And I'm not interested in managing disease, and I know a lot of people that have a disease don't want it managed, they want to get well. So how are we going to do this? How are we going to do this? Now, we've got, you know, these proposals coming out of Washington, D.C. for modifications of health care. We're going to reform health care, whether it was going to be Hillary Clinton before or whether it was going to be now Obama, or we've had Senator Baucus, and they're all up there going, we're going to have a public option, but we're not sure we're not going to have it now. But yet what is coming through the bill? Each time we try to read this thing, you know, over 1,000 pages long very often. I've got a link here I was reading. Read the bill. Not as easy as you think. How long, quote from this article, how long would it actually take to read the bill? A group of voice actors got through the House legislation in about 24 hours. In other words, they hired a bunch of actors to read the bill. It took them 24 hours to read every word of it.
Unbelievable.
And the plain English version of this Baucus bill took a bit over half that time, 12 hours to read through this. And, you know, they're arguing about transparency, yet they're not convinced that they want to reveal it to us and have it posted on the web for at least 72 hours, 24 of which it might take us to read it if we were sitting in and didn't blink and didn't take any time out for bathroom breaks. So we've got a lot of problems here. You know what kind of monkey business they're going to be throwing in this bill, and how it's not going to be something that will enhance your ability to care for your health, because the government's going to be more entrenched and more involved, not less so. And this is on the heels of some interesting audio clips. In fact, we've got an audio clip from Representative John Shadegg. He's a Republican from Arizona. And he actually nails it, because we're thinking that maybe a health savings account would be better. And I would argue, yes, it's better than not having it. But there's still an element of pharmaceutical or social engineering with the health savings accounts and how you can spend your money.
Are you kidding? Play the clip.
We don't buy government-approved health insurance, and that's an important part of it. If you, for example, have an HSA and the government doesn't approve it, and you don't go buy another plan, you get fined or maybe go to jail. If you want to go to a naturopath or a homeopath, no. That's not approved by the government.
This is unbelievable to me.
Exactly. Representative Shadegg, he acknowledges the fact that you're not free with your own money. It's yours. You earned it. You worked to get it. And you can't choose the kind of doctor you want if it's not approved by the government. And I ask you, Michael, where in the Constitution does it allow the government to establish a monopoly of one form of medicine or healing over any other? Or outsource it, if you will, to a bureaucratic oligarchy like the FDA, the FTC, to police it so that you cannot seek any assistance outside of pharmaceutical interventionism. And we've been at it again and again, and the sheeple will say, wow, how can you attack Big Pharma that way? Listen, I don't mind Big Pharma being out there in a free market. Let them compete. Let them compete with all of the herbs, the botanicals, the minerals, the homeopaths. And you don't have to believe in homeopathy. This isn't supposed to be a form of, let's say, pharmaceutical tyranny any more than it should be a religious cult of Big Pharma. The freedom of your neighbor to choose something you don't believe in, it's part of, that's the fundamental tenet of America. Your religious freedom, your spiritual freedom, as long as you violate nobody else's rights. So why do so many of the sheeple feel like, well, we can't allow any other thing than, you know, drug and vaccine type medicine? You know, and government has become so far embedded in Big Pharma or vice versa, you don't know where one begins and another ends. That's not good. That's not healthy.
Just further proof that liberals do not want people to empower themselves with natural medicine.
And we've got more out of the news, in fact, in regards to not only, well, we've covered the swine flu. I don't even have to touch that right now. But there was a California doctor, licensed, he's in good standing, everything. And they've gone off and busted this guy. What did he do wrong? I mean, this is the question. Why would they go after a doctor? Now, this doctor, in fact, helps people with cancer. He, in fact, sells herbs that he claims can help his patients and others overcome cancer. He even claims that about 60% are helped by these herbs. Now, it's still legal, Michael, to sell herbs in America. All right? You could still do that. But dare you mention that it might have a benefit against any disease, and suddenly you become a criminal.
You are taking money away from the big pharmaceutical companies.
You're treated. I mean, in fact, the federal government can fine you faster if you can claim to help somebody with cancer with an herb than they can find a terrorist in Afghanistan, like Osama bin Laden. So we've got this, misplaced concept of liberty. So liberty's good. It's great. We like freedom, except when it comes to healing. Then it's okay for Big Pharma and big government to be in bed and have a monopoly and not let anybody else play in the sandbox, right? That's an artificial market. That's not a free market. As I said, if Big Pharma is so great and they have a lot of interesting tools that you know, a lot of people will endorse, and there may be needs for them at certain points in times, they should be able to compete no problem in a true free market. But right now they have the federal government strong-arming doctors who simply want to help their patients holistically. So this story about this doctor being arrested, he's on charges of selling herbs as cancer cure, came out of the health blog at the Wall Street Journal. Jacob Goldstein did a good write-up, and he said it point blank, it's legal to sell herbs to sick people. It's not legal to go on TV and say that those herbs you sell cure cancer. And the reality of oncology, again, defend anybody's right to choose it if they believe it's the right way to go, although I've interviewed so many doctors over the years that would not subject themselves or their family members to the same treatment that all of us have to get by decree. In fact, it simply just says, hey, what's wrong with having the freedom to choose something that is not approved by government? What gave government the powers of God to dictate what is the right medicine for you or me? They are not educated enough, and even if they were, they'd screw it up, as they do with just about everything else. And then we have other diseases that you don't hear this in the mainstream of media. It takes talk radio, it takes some of the blog sites on the internet to actually uncover this. But there was actually a huge story published in the Daily Express in Great Britain. Interesting story out of the UK. This was from one of the developers of the HPV shot. You know, we talk about Gardasil. They want to inject all of these little girls with the human papillomavirus vaccine. Now, they link it to cervical cancer later in life. But what they don't tell you is that it takes a polymerase chain reaction test, the PCR test, to analyze and amplify a fragment of DNA thousands and thousands and thousands of times to say that, oh, look, HPV may be there. It might be the cause. They've never actually confirmed it. It's a suspicion. But even so, now one of the developers of this shot actually is going on the record here saying the jab may be as deadly as the cancer.
Oh, my God.
I quote from this article, the cervical cancer vaccine may be riskier and more deadly than the cancer it is designed to prevent. A leading expert who helped develop the drug has warned. And she also claimed that the jab would do nothing to reduce the rates of cervical cancer, this in the United Kingdom. But, of course, equally here. And, in fact, this was related to the clinical trials of the new drug Cervarix from GSK. You know, this is a kind of over-marketing and immediate approval of something that we won't know the side effects or the fact that it may, in fact, not work for many, many years. And interestingly enough, Michael, this article that was published in the UK was actually pulled from the paper, from the website, due to pressure. And now you have to pull it up, and I have it linked, but you have to pull it up off of cached sources on the web because they actually wanted to blanket out. Social networking sites were actually putting this up, trying to put this news out to say, hey, maybe moms and dads, you should think twice before subjecting your children to these experimental medicaments. And, of course, even the social networking sites were blocking it. So there's an interesting concerted effort to block freedom of speech, to block the free flow of information, to block the free market, which brings us almost full circle back to this so-called phony healthcare reform bill in all of its variations, that it has never been about health freedom. Your freedom, as the congressman from Arizona had mentioned, your freedom, you, it's your money. Do you get to use it on a naturopath, on a homeopath? No, only one form. As if we've elevated, like Dr. Benjamin Rush, who signed the Declaration of Independence. And he said, unless the Constitution makes a special place for health freedom, one day medicine will organize into an undercover dictatorship and restrict the art of healing to one class of men and deny equal privileges to others. That is un-American and despotic and has no place in a republic. If you believe in freedom, it has to include the freedom to heal, even by means unapproved by government. Do Americans still love liberty enough to stand up for that level of freedom, or have they bought hook, line, and sinker the idea that people in Congress, that an unelected bureaucratic oligarchy could and should take care of their health? And could they do it better than you could? Absolutely not. The healthcare disaster is not at all due to a lack of government interference. It's 100% due to that interference and that granting of monopoly status to one form of medicine over all others. The solution to our healthcare woes, which are really woes of disease management, is not more government, it's less. It's not less freedom, it's more. In fact, it is freedom. Liberty is what will salvage this nation, and it will save us from this healthcare disaster that we have right now, known as a monopoly medicine.
Thanks for the report, Robert.
Thanks, Michael, for having me back on again. Always an honor, privilege to rock the health world right here on the Savage Nation. And, of course, if those of you who want to learn more can go to my blog at robertscottbell.blogspot.com or just Google my name. If you have the courage and the love of liberty, I'm happy to sign on anytime.
Monopolies of any kind are bad for the average person. When the government is involved, it only makes it worse for self-care.
Savage.
The philosopher Santayana said that those who do not know their history are condemned to repeat it. That goes for our political history. Few people today seem to remember George Orwell's book 1984 and how well it's starting to apply to the current Obama administration. Here's David Niven in a 1949 radio adaptation of Orwell's book. Listen to the words and see if you can picture a giant poster of Hussein Obama looking down at you.
The past is dead. The future is
unimaginable. I am alone, lost in a monstrous world. What living human creature is on my side? How do I know that the power of the party won't endure forever?
Like an answer, the three slogans on the white face of the Ministry of Truth come back to you.
War is peace. Freedom is liberty. Ignorance is strength.
Amazing how well it applies today. And as we know, certain words and thoughts are not allowed in today's communist political discourse in America.
How's that dictionary of new speak getting on?
Slowly. I'm on the adjectives. It's fascinating.
It must be quite a job inventing new words.
Oh, that's not our chief job at all. We're destroying words. What sense is there in having a whole string of useless, vague words like excellent and splendid and all the rest of them? Plus good covers the meaning, or double plus good if you want something stronger still. Don't you see the beauty of that, Winston? It was B.B.'s idea originally, of course.
Well, no, that's Simon of Big Brother's most revolutionary idea.
Oh, it's not just words. In the end, we shall make thought crime impossible, because there will be no words in which to express it. Has it ever occurred to you, Winston, that by the year 2050, not a single human will be alive who could understand such a conversation as we're now having?
Oh, except the proletarians, of course.
Oh, the proletarians are not human beings. Proles and animals are free.
The proletarians are not considered human, just as the conservatives of today, according to More Snotty Nonsense by Chicks, MSNBC.
Who controls the present controls the past. The party can thrust its hand into the past and say of this or that event, it never happened. And this is more terrifying than mere torture and death. The party says, reject the evidence of your eyes and ears. It is the final, most essential command.
Who controls the past controls the present. Reject what your eyes and ears tell you. Is that from Orwell or from a White House press conference? I had a dream where a voice spoke to me from heaven, and it said something. I can't remember exactly. It was something like, I distinctly remember the word vigilant. The voice said to me, be vigilant and be tolerant. I said, that's a very good phrase. And I try to think what it meant. Be vigilant, which is obvious, and be tolerant. Now, the be tolerant part is a very interesting one. Because tolerance doesn't mean permit yourself to be rolled over by everybody under every circumstance. There's a difference between tolerance and stupidity. There is a difference between tolerance and naivete. There's a difference between tolerance and gullibility. There's a difference between tolerance, and I can give you 5 or 10 other words that have been lost to the American conversation. Tolerance is an awfully big word, but it doesn't mean gullibility. It doesn't mean naivete. It means tolerant. Tolerant means judgment. But the liberal has been brainwashed into not being judgmental, which has turned them into a sort of an individual who will let anything go except conservative thought. So think of my words. Be vigilant and be tolerant. It came from my subconscious to you. Take it as my gift. Be vigilant and be tolerant. I didn't say be vigilant and be intolerant, did I? Because that, if I said be vigilant and be intolerant, then the vigilance would have less meaning. Vigilance requires analysis. Vigilance requires work. Liberals and progressives don't like to think about these things. They want to leave it to the government to do it for them. I don't. The reason I don't trust government is because they're just people like myself. And I know that I'm emotional. I know that I'm capable of making errors. And therefore, I know that the people who run my government are emotional and capable of making errors as well. The difference is that their errors can cause grave damage both to the nation and to the world. And right now, they're making one grave error after another. They're emotional. They're swinging all over the map. And so they're pushing socialized medicine. The people have pushed back. And that explains, by the way, where the anti-war protesters are. You know, I got to tell you something, a quick story. So I walked along the waterfront of San Francisco, and I got to tell you, there's a part of the city I didn't even know was there. I mean, I knew it was. I never go there because I'm set in my ways. I went from the ferry terminal all the way down to Alioto's by foot. There, it looks like Pike Street Market now, stores and delis and groceries and bars and clam house. I couldn't believe how beautiful it was. And you could walk all around the water. So I stopped at my friend's place. I haven't been there in a while, the waterfront. And I went in for 2 drinks. First, I wasn't drinking. It's a funny story in a way. I said, okay, I can't do this anymore. I'm not going to drink right after a show. I'm going to take a long walk. But the further I went along the wharf, the more tired I got and the thirstier I got. So by the time I hit the first station of the cross, the waterfront, and my friend who owns it was there. He jumped, Michael, come on in. He said, let me buy you a drink. I said, no, I really shouldn't. I'm taking a long walk. I said, all right, I'll take a drink. Well, one drink led to another, and he said to me, you know, I really respect the fact that you have to defend yourself. I listened to your show. You did a great job. Defend yourself. You're the only one who can do it, so do it. Then I wound up in Alioto's, and I drank some more vodka, and I had a great meal. They understand why I'm defending myself. You don't have to explain it to people who understand what freedom is. Now, what do I mean by that? They understand what freedom is. Let me give you an example. If you let these Obama thugs get away with it, they would seize restaurants that people built through 40 or 50 or 60 or 70 years of family hard work, and they would say the state now owns your restaurant. This was done in Cuba. This was done in Cuba. Businesses were seized by the gangster brothers, the Castros, and they were taken away from people who had built businesses up over a 50-year period. They stole sugar plantations, they stole hotels, they stole restaurants, and they said, in the name of the revolution, we're taking your restaurant. And they turned it over to incompetent bureaucrats who could not run the restaurant. The restaurants became shabby. Eventually, they went out of business. Now, if they didn't actually shoot the restaurant owner or put him in a slave labor camp, they let him become a dishwasher in his own restaurant. And if you think I'm making this up, then you're an ignoramus. Then you're a bigger schmuck than even your wife thinks you are. Let's put that aside. It's Blue Monday on the Savage Nation.
You saw me standing alone, without a dream in my heart, without a love of my own.
With God's will and your listenership, I shall return.
Blue Moon.
Savage.